Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hi guys, Toby Mathis here with the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, and I'm joined by Meg Boozing from the Midwest You Can Foundation. She's got a great story that we're going to be sharing today. And really, I just have a big theme for this particular podcast, which is anybody can and you can. I'm going to steal Meg's words. So welcome, Meg, first off.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tell us just a little bit about yourself. What's your background? How did you get into the world of philanthropy and creating a really cool organization that we're going to learn about today?
Yeah, well, I'm just the average Nebraskan girl. Grew up in Lincoln and went to nursing school and became a nurse. So that's my...
Are you a Cornhusker?
Of course.
Oh my God. All right.
We're going to do it this year. We're going to do it this year. I say that every year. We're going to do it. But yeah, I'm a registered nurse, but I also suffer from the after results of a traumatic brain injury in 1998 and was in a coma and on life support and did physical and occupational therapy. And that was freshman year of high school. So I fully recovered physically, had some mental challenges, but did graduate high school and made it into nursing school. And that's where I started having seizures. And so from that came a long journey of dealing with my epilepsy, not being able to find a cure with medications. I had brain surgery where they removed the part of my brain with the scar tissue from the traumatic brain injury. So thank goodness, life has been pretty good since then, and I've been seizure free. Wow. And so, you know, I volunteered at a camp for kids with cancer in California way back when in college, and I saw what a true value it made for families and for kids with cancer to come together. Mm-hmm. And it just inspired me to create a similar experience for kids and teens with epilepsy in the Midwest.
That's pretty darn cool. So I'm just going to give you a plug right off the bat that this is the Midwest You Can Foundation, right? Midwest You Can?
Yes, because so many times with epilepsy, we're reminded of what we can't do. You know, no more sports, no more driving. And we wanted to create a place where kids can come together and see all that they can do despite their epilepsy. So that's kind of where the name came from.
And so you go to MidwestYouCan.org if you want to actually check out. It's actually really cool. You have a bunch of camps, right, where you're bringing folks in that epilepsy is your main area?
Yep, that's our main area.
And that's because you had the personal experience of having to go through this.
Right.
Now, was it a car accident that
yep.
occurred?
And yep.
How long were you in a coma for?
And that was in 1998 on the way home from school. Car accident and a traumatic brain injury. I was in a coma for 6 days.
Your poor parents.
Yeah, I know. Now being a mom myself, you know, I just can't imagine that happening to one of my kids. I'm watching them in a coma on a ventilator, but I did wake up 6 days later and then was told that I had a traumatic brain injury.
How did that register with you? Was it something where it took a while for it really to hit some of what that actually meant and some of the things that were going to happen or what was that like?
Yeah, I always say that when I woke up not knowing where I was, but I saw my family, recognized them, and then I always joke that my mom handed me a mirror. And I saw that my worst nightmare had come true. As a freshman in high school, my hair was messed up. They had to shave, they had to shave part of my head after the car accident to monitor the pressure in my brain.
Oh,
so as a 14-year-old, I was super bummed. But then I felt also relieved that after what they explained was such a serious accident, mm-hmm. all that had changed was my hair. but I had no idea what was brewing inside and what those side effects were going to be.
So I always look at, and again, I'm just a tax lawyer guy, but I deal with a lot of clients and different scenarios. And I've always seen that when you have traumatic events occur in one's life, it either shapes you or you use it to shape yourself. You had the, when were the first real manifestations of the epilepsy? When did you even know that you were having epileptic episodes? Because sometimes you don't even know you're having them, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, after the traumatic brain injury, it left some scar tissue on my brain from the TBI. So not until 10 years later did my seizures start. So the doctors have just said, you know, that bruising on your brain and the signals in your brain were just starting to get a little off. And that's when the seizure started. So not until 10 years later, after the car accident, did the seizure start.
Did they try surgery or anything like that? How were they treating this?
Yeah, they've put me on a medication right away. And I'd never been on a daily medication before, you know, so it was kind of tough to get used to at first. So I was on, but I just kept having seizure after seizure. So then they added another medication, kept having seizure after seizure. I got up to 4 medications at their maximum dose. So it was about, I was popping about 20 pills a day. And that's when my doctor told me, you know what, you need to consider something else to treat your epilepsy. And that's when he told me about brain surgery.
And oh my goodness. So I actually used to have a business partner who had grand mal seizures, and she would take medicines, and she says it was the worst thing. About once a year, they'd tinker with the medications. And she said, I just felt like a zombie. Did you experience?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. It's like, I would say, I don't know what's worse, the medication or the seizures,
you know,
because I was in la la land all day on those medications. Just like you said, you're dizzy, you know, trouble focusing. And so the doctor just said, you know what, if you had brain surgery and it worked, we could lower some of your medication so you're not on so many.
Did it work?
So that was a pro, actually. They went in there, they removed the scar tissue from the 1998 traumatic brain injury, closed me back up. They always explain it as something so simple, but it's really, you know, traumatic event for me. But the surgery did work and I've been seizure free.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, since 2001.
So you were 24 then, about 24 when you had your first seizure?
Yeah.
Were you in school?
Yeah, I wasn't. So maybe it was a little bit, I was about 22 or so. Yeah, actually the first seizure that happened, because we always say seizures like to make their entrance at the most inopportune times. So I was up in front of my class in nursing school giving a presentation.
Did your injury have a, is that the reason you went into nursing, or what was the reason you went into nursing?
Yeah, that was the main reason. I just saw what an impact nurses can have on patients, just taking that extra time out during their day. And then also my mom is a nurse. And so I saw her, you know, day in and day out, what meaning she got from nursing and just the stories that she would come home with after a day of work. And
but
so
it's
that
brutal,
just,
isn't it? It's brutal to become a nurse, right? It's just,
yeah, it is. The schooling, you know, I always joke with friends that were advertising majors, you know, we'd be doing our 10-hour nursing day and clinicals. And so
you're going through that. You're going through that and you're having seizures at that time. They start to surface.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. And like right in the middle of a 10-hour day, right? You all of a sudden you have what would it be like? Just explain to us. So, because this isn't fall down seizure. Like a lot of people think of seizure as somebody will actually fall on the ground, lose control, things like that. Is that what this is, or is it something different?
No, you're right. That's the seizure that everybody else thinks of, but mine were complex partial. So that's why it was kind of hard for me to believe that they actually were seizures. I thought it was anxiety. My heart would start to race. I'd be kind of trying to swallow and it'd be hard to swallow. But then when people saw me have them, they said they saw my left arm raise up in the air when a seizure happened. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be able to answer when someone was talking to me. And just, you know, being not having control of the seizures, just knowing that it could happen anytime, you know, so that's just really got to me to be, you know, they say the emotional impact of epilepsy is right up there with the physical aspect.
And that's just, I wanted to let everybody know that's listening. You actually did a TED Talk. If you don't know what a TED Talk is, they're pretty darn awesome. But you did a TED Talk on this, right?
Yes.
And what was that like?
That was, you know, they say you share your story. And I remember we had a TED coach that kind of helped us. And she said, the lower you can go or the most vulnerable you can make yourself, the more you're going to relate to people. Mm-hmm. So working with her, you know, and just peeling off and being able to express to the audience of 500 what it was like to have a TBI, have epilepsy, and the difficulties that have come, that did come along and continue to come along with both of those.
So if anybody ever says, hey, my life's hard, call you up, right?
And just exactly. Say, hey, right, hey. I'm a good one to call and we could send them the TED Talk.
Yes.
And hopefully people can relate because I would have loved to hear someone in a TED Talk express feelings.
Did you work with anybody that had epilepsy that was trying to help? Like, because a lot of folks don't realize, again, so Camp You Can, you're doing these camps for people with epilepsy. You're obviously giving back. Were you inspired to do that because somebody was working with you that had epilepsy to help you in your recovery?
You know, my family was so supportive and the doctors and stuff, but I really got the idea from the cancer camp that I volunteered at in college in California. And it was there where I saw the true value of bringing a group of kids together.
So you just decided, I want to do this Camp You Can. I want to help kids with epilepsy. And what is it? They're going out and they're doing all sorts of stuff that anybody would do in a camping outfit. But
yeah, these are kids ages 7 to 17 with epilepsy. And they're coming together to do the zip line, the rock wall, shooting bow and arrows, you know, catching fish, going in the boats. And, you know, it's more the parents, too, that I see how much that it makes an impact on them. Because so many times they're reminded of the things that their kids can't do. And so this is just a place where parents can come together and leave their kids in a safe environment. Since we have nurses like myself there, we have a physician at camp. So parents can feel safe dropping off their kids. Mm-hmm. And then the kids can see all that they can do, that their friends who go to summer camp, now they can go back to school and share what it was like for them to go on the zip line. Mm. So they're just feeling really empowered at camp and able to relate to others. And that's what I want them to get out of camp, to find that they're not alone with epilepsy.
If you are a real estate investor, trader, or business owner who wants to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and build future wealth, then you need to attend the next 3-day tax and asset protection event sponsored by Anderson Business Advisors. At the event, podcast hosts Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman will discuss the art of building generational wealth, ninja equity stripping strategies to discourage lawsuits, the reason to forget LLCs for real estate, tax strategies to stay out of the IRS crosshairs, avoid the joint venture chamber of horrors, and much more. The Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Event is held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Join us for the next 3-day Tax and Asset Protection Event and network with other investors and business owners while learning strategies to build your wealth and help you sleep better at night with a solid peace of mind knowing you have prepared for anything. Learn about the next event dates and locations by going to AndersonAP.com and register today. That's AndersonAP.com to register. AndersonAP.com.
So it's pretty amazing that you first off decided to do this. And I hate to go into the finances and stuff like that.
Sure.
But I look at it and say, you were doing this and you weren't killing it, right? You weren't like making tons and tons of money. You were doing this because it was something you honestly just wanted to give back. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. It gives me meaning and purpose too.
Yeah. And so when you first started doing the camps, did you go out and set up your own organization or did you work with somebody else? Or how did you go about actually creating the Camp You Can experience?
Yeah, I started out just by asking a local organization, you know, if they could help us publicize camp and if we could run along with them. So for about the first 4 years or so, we ran under another nonprofit. So if donors wanted to come in and donate money for tax purposes, they could use this other foundation's tax ID number, which I had no idea what tax ID numbers were. I had no idea about any of this. So that was a good learning experience before starting our own.
Mm-hmm. And how did that learning experience go? Did you find that you were getting all the benefit of all the monies you were raising, or was it going elsewhere?
It was, you know, going, all of it was going towards camp. To keep camp going, we like to keep camp as affordable as possible for families because I know myself how pricey epilepsy can be. So we try to keep camp very low for families. So all of our fundraising was coming in and going straight out to camp, and which I wanted it to do. You know, that's what I wanted it to be used for.
And then you broke off and did your own. And you did your own. Why did you break off and do your own?
Well, thanks to you and encouragement from other people. You know, we just wanted to be able to make our own decisions regarding what we do with the money and what we do as far as activities. And just that we can call it our own and still work alongside of the other nonprofit and the other resources for people with epilepsy in Nebraska. But we just kind of wanted our own to make decisions to take in generous donations. And I heard that starting our own was the way to do that.
Mm-hmm. Just to give some pretext, and I'll let everybody know, I met Meg from a referral from a client who said, you have to help Meg. She's doing something really cool. And she's getting some bad advice. And at least he felt that the other organization was taking a little bit of advantage and that they were, you know, maybe not necessarily allowing you to grow to the extent that you could. And so a lot of folks are under the impression that they can't do anything or that these things are ungodly expensive.
Right.
If you're willing to give us an idea of what you're like, were you a rich person or were you making a ton of money when you decided to do this? Or were you just average person and this was like, hey, just give people kind of some context?
Yeah, that's a good point. Just to give some background, I was about making under $10,000 a year when I got this whole thing started. You know, so I myself thought that it would cost a lot to get a nonprofit started. But, you know, with resources and with your generous help and support.
You're gonna get it popping up. How much, now let's just put it into context. How long did it take you to how do I say this without being too funky? Do you raise more now than you made before you set something up? Like, is it easier to raise the money for the organization now?
Yes, it's a lot easier having our own 501c3. So we can tell donors this is directly where your finances are going and you can claim it during tax season. But yeah, we're making about, you know, double what I came in with the 501c3.
And it's just because other people are willing to get behind it and help.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. And our fundraiser.
Tell me about your fundraiser. So what do you do to raise money for your foundation?
Before this year, we were just doing generous donations from companies, drug companies that wanted to give, local healthcare facilities that wanted to give. But this year, we decided to have an epilepsy walk. And so we got a large crowd coming in for that. And so that and our other generous donations this past year have been about 25,000 or more.
Nice.
So now, that's like woohoo to us, yes. To us small nonprofits. It's like woohoo. I know to bigger nonprofits, it's like, oh man, that's a little. But to us,
you'll look back in 20 years and you'll laugh about where you came from.
Yeah.
What would you tell to somebody who's sitting at home or listening to this in the gym or something else, and they're thinking, it's not for me. Like, and I would never be able to go out and raise money. Maybe it's veterans. Maybe it's somebody who had somebody who was affected by suicide. Maybe it was somebody who was affected. You saw somebody who was a mom abused who had to flee a bad situation, or, you know, you have a heart for the homeless or the extreme poor. What would you tell to that person about what they're able to do?
If you find the right resources and you have the passion, you're able to meet the right people that are as equally supportive of your cause. And just working together as a team, I had no idea how far you can go. Just believing in yourself. And then it goes right back to Camp You Can, seeing all that you can do. You know, and just the people that you named, I think people who are experiencing it themselves mm-hmm. are oftentimes the greatest starters of the nonprofit because the passion is already there. The ability to be able to empathize with the population that you're working with mm-hmm. already there, you know? So it's just bringing in the funds to keep you going. But I think they're already qualified for the job because mm-hmm. of their personal experience. So then comes the fundraising. And I never knew how far I could take this without your help. And
you don't have to pitch me, that's for sure.
No, I know, but you've been awesome.
I appreciate that. And, you know, what I just look at is there's a lot of folks sitting on the sidelines. And we're all surrounded by those people that tell us everything that we can't do
right.
and how it's going to be a failure and you're going to fail. And this is, I always call them crabs. You know, they're going to pull you right back into the crab box. If you've ever seen somebody who crabs, they don't have to put a lid on the little box where they store all the crabs because the crabs won't let themselves out of the box. As soon as one's poking its head up and about to get out, the other one's grabbing his legs and pull them right back.
Right back down. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we're all surrounded by that. We know that. We're bombarded with limiting beliefs and people telling us, oh, you can't do that. What would you say to that person? Like if you just speak directly to somebody, imagine that they're sitting on their couch and they're like, really, I really want to do something that changes the world. I really feel like I want to help. You know, again, you could fill in the blank. Maybe I just want to help other families. Maybe I want to help the children and their families understand something. What would you say to that person?
I would just say, believe in yourself. Mm-hmm. Start with an idea and believe in yourself, and then just find the right people to help you achieve your goal. And I'm learning that, you know, you never know unless you ask. Is something that I'm learning. You never know if somebody will want to join your board unless you ask. You'll never know if someone will want to be a camp counselor because you got to ask them first. And that's something that I'm learning, that asking for help is a good thing to do and is a good leadership role, is the ability to ask for help. So I'm learning that, to ask for help. But yeah, just believing in yourself that you can start something that even if it impacts one person's life mm-hmm. or impact a million lives, it's been really healing for mm-hmm. me to be able to start the foundation and, you know, show people what they can do.
You get pretty excited about going and doing these. Like, is it something that gets you up in the morning where you're actually looking forward to, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to do something really, I'm going to go out and teach a camp.
This is like my new passion. Yeah, it gives me worth and meaning because mm-hmm. like, you know, I was a nurse, but that's been difficult to get back into because of the areas of the brain that were affected by my epilepsy. Mm-hmm. And so this is my new passion and giving me purpose and meaning because I can't go back to what I always thought I would be doing. Mm-hmm. So doing this sort of thing has brought a lot of healing to me and my family too.
Mm-hmm. A lot of silver linings in you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
That's pretty amazing. How many counselors, I'll step back just for 1 second. A lot of folks think that when you're doing a nonprofit, it's just tax reasons. There are some fantastic tax reasons to do a nonprofit, but you got to have the passion towards something.
Yeah.
You can raise money or you can raise time. And so I assume that some people give money and some people give time.
Exactly.
And let's talk about the time. Who gives time to you and what do they do?
We recruit, just like you said, camp counselors. And we get about 25 college students or older that just want to help. They mm-hmm. just want to help kids. They have some free time in the summer. Some have medical background. And so we get a big group of volunteer camp counselors. We get nurses that want to come in and help the campers while at camp. We even have a physician, which as a nurse, that's like amazing cool. to find a physician. So yeah, just getting the public involved and volunteers. It's just mm-hmm. awesome.
This is completely aside, but since you're in the realm of epilepsy, brain treatments are something that, like, I have a daughter who I think I told you this, that she graduated in neuroscience and she really wants to study the brain. She always looks at it and says, the brain's one of the few areas where we don't do a physical evaluation of it when diagnosing issues.
Yeah.
What type of changes has the medical community made? Like, is this something where they're actually embracing, hey, there's a chance that we can heal some of the damage that's been done to the brain? You always hear stem cells and you always hear about different treatments and things like that. Is this something where they're making strides?
Yes, I think with epilepsy, one of the main strides is getting it out, letting the public know what a seizure is, what epilepsy is. So already, I think that's a huge stride just to get rid of the stigma of epilepsy. But then, yeah, there are new treatments coming out. You know, back in the day, it used to be medication is about all you got. But now we have other options like surgery, and there are various other ones that people are now able to do to help with their seizures. So we've seen campers come to camp who take medication. Some campers have had surgery. So it's neat that the parents can come together and get ideas about other treatments too.
Fantastic. So yeah. I really appreciate you coming. Again, I'm going to say go to MidwestYouCan.org, MidwestYouCan.org. Learn all about the Midwest You Can Foundation. Obviously, there's on the website, I'm looking at it right now, there's areas where you can donate, but you could also volunteer. Again, it's money and time.
Yeah.
If you don't have money, don't feel like you can't participate and make a difference. And sometimes you're on the journey in life where you're trying to figure out what direction you want to take. Maybe it's time to go volunteer a little bit.
Yeah.
And see what other people are doing and get some ideas there. Are you looking for volunteers?
Yep, we're always looking for volunteers as our camp continues to grow, the more volunteers we need. So if anyone is interested in being a Camp You Can volunteer, we can always use them.
That's perfect. Thank you so much for joining me today, Meg. And again, I'm just going to say, I'll put a link up on the TED Talk so you can
awesome.
See.
Awesome.
They can all see your story. I can see you shine on the big stage. And then also, please visit our website. And if nothing else, realize that we can certainly all use a little kick in the butt to get us moving, and that rarely are we disappointed when we go out and we do things that we're passionate about. So thanks again, Meg, for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me. I really appreciate your support.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.